Hello, and welcome to my birthday special of Articulate Warbling. With me, your co-host, Laura, and your other co-host...
Zach.
Oh, well, that was boring, wasn't it?
Zach. Well, how did you want me?
Zach! It's my birthday weekend.
Hello, it's her birthday weekend, and I am Zach!
Much better.
Awesome.
Anyway, so, welcome to the latest episode.
I'm getting high off of your fumes. Your birthday fumes.
I've just done my nails, you guys, so Zach is currently getting high off of about 7 layers, I think I've got on these nails.
Well, when I was checking out which book I was going to read next, I was literally, like, going through them, going, why do they smell like glue? Why do they smell of... I can't...
And
then
I'm sat
smell?
There just behind him, like, slowly painting my nails, like, well, don't look at me.
What is the smell? What is it? What is in it?
Is it acetone? Oh, wait, no. Acetone is the one that removes nail varnish. Hang on.
What's actually in it?
It's so small you can't see.
Oh.
Use the magnifying part of my glasses, if that will help.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Ethyl acetate. Oh, it's acetate, isn't it? Loads and loads and loads of acetate.
And is that, like, usually I like the smell, but this is a bit heady.
Yeah, well, this is heady because, I'm using a, it doesn't even say what colour it is, dude.
Flesh coloured.
Yeah, it's kind of like a pinky flesh colour. So I had to do 3 coats of that because it was quite thin. And then I did a top coat. And then I was like, oh, I should have done sparkles. Then I did a sparkle coat. And then I did another top coat.
No, it smells like a factory.
It does. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes, there's actually 6 coats on my nails. Hence the reason why I'm going around everywhere with my fingers, like, really far apart.
So we're not doing drugs deliberately in celebration of Laura's birthday, as we don't partake in any form of drugs.
Drug misuse.
But, yeah. So it's your birthday. Excited? What are your plans? Tell the viewers, listeners, whatever yours.
Well, I kind of got an early birthday present just now, didn't I? Because I got a message from one of my higher-ups at work who was like, oh, I've sent you something for your birthday, and it says it's been delivered to a safe place. And I'm like, huh? I don't have a safe place, and I didn't hear the door go. Yeah. Turns out we were in Asda. And,
Walmart for USA.
And, yeah, so I went and checked under my rose bush, and there was this lovely Marks & Spencer's box with a great big bunch of sunflowers, and I love sunflowers.
Marks and Spencer's, eh? That's an idea for the future for my mum, because she loves sunflowers too.
Ah. So, yeah, anyway, so that was really nice. And then, yeah, so tomorrow I'm going over to see a colleague in his back garden.
A friend?
Yeah, he is. He's more of a friend than a colleague, really. I don't know why I call him a colleague. I met him at work, but he's now a friend. So I'm going over to see him and his wife tomorrow. We're going to have some tea and cake. And then tomorrow afternoon...
Cake.
Tomorrow afternoon, I'm with Zach and Zach's mum and Zach's sister and Zach's granddad and my mum, and we're going to have a...
I've missed out 3 very important people, part of that household.
Oh, I'm sorry. Todd, Daisy, Jet, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. 2 dogs and a cat. And we're all going to have a little, gathering. I like to call it a party because I've never really had a party.
Soiree.
But everyone keeps telling me it's a gathering because apparently that's more sophisticated. No. I'm going to call it
a party. It's a
party,
man. There's alcohol. And I mean, more alcohol than anticipated. Like, my family don't listen to this. This is how supportive they are of what I do. Fuck you guys. Joking aside, went and got some essential bits, like, basically, like, what you need for a party. Well, the bits that my mum hadn't already picked up. And my sister's priority was, I want Desperado, which is tequila beer, which both of us love. So I got about 12 bottles of that. We leave the store, and I say, shall we go halves on it, as in split the bill on it? And she's like, nah, that whole crate's mine. I'm like, oh. Okay. Luckily enough, we were going to another store to find a gluten-free... a cake tray.
We went to find actually hot dog buns.
Yeah.
We went to find gluten-free hot dog buns, which only Tesco do, thank you Tesco. And then we were also looking for a cake of some sort that has jelly beans on the top. Why would you put jelly beans on the top of the cake?
It's nice. I'll have your jelly beans.
You eat my jelly beans.
And then I got myself some Desperados. But yeah, more alcohol than necessary. If my sister dares eyes up my bottle, she can do one.
Yeah, anyway, so Saturday we've got a party. Thank you very much,
kindly.
I'm a non-drinker, but it's cool because actually I find it way more fun to be sober and watch Zach's mum get pissed. No, I'm just kidding.
Which you've had to suffer.
And then Sunday...
less so my granddad, because the last time that happened, you had to lay on the floor with him for 6 hours.
I'm pretty sure it was only 4, but it felt like 10.
No, it was 6.
And then Sunday is my actual birthday, the 28th. And if you guys don't post happy birthday, even though it's belated, I will cry.
Well, I don't think anyone will know. It's much too late. Because by the time this goes out, DB's like, oh, it's 2 weeks left.
Well,
shit.
Okay, well, DB at least put some, like, I don't know, sing your own happy birthday tune at the stage.
Birthday, birthday. Oh, what a good time. Birthday, birthday. Because happy birthday is really expensive.
Correct.
To use.
So, anyway, Sunday is my actual birthday. And Zach says he's going to cook me something for breakfast. Please help me. Please send help.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And then...
Fuck knows what I'm doing.
Then, obviously, I get all my presents, right? Zach's bought me, like, 22 presents. My mum's bought me one, which goes very nicely into 23, which is my age, or will be on Sunday. And then my mum is cooking a 3-course meal in replacement for,
Not being
able to go out. I mean, we probably could, but the effort is just too much, man. So we're going to have...
Even as much the reality being, you sent this fucking hilarious... You showed me this really hilarious meme of Weatherspoons as an example of what it's going to look like with the dividers. And what was the saying? It was like, yes, this is what I've been waiting for all this time, way before the coronavirus.
It's
basically
literally like tables with, like, cubicle blocks around them. So it literally means that you never, like, see the other people next to you, which is great because I always have a situation, or we always have a situation when we go out to eat with some big burly guy who thinks he's a bit fucking clever and he's just like, yeah, look at me again, mate, and I'll take it outside. And we're like, I just want to eat my pasta. So anyway.
Yeah, but that was like a shithole.
Yeah, that
probably
was pretty.
Anyone, nice. If you come and have a holiday, as awesome as the cinemas are, the patrons of that cinema and the local vicinity of Crawley is full of just arseholes, really.
Correct. Mum's going to do mozzarella sticks on a rocket salad with some sweet chilli sauce.
Do we need more potato salad?
No. We're not having potato salad with anything.
But what is a rocket salad?
Rocket and baby leaves underneath the mozzarella sticks.
What's the sauce you're having?
There isn't going to be one for the starter.
Your mum's not creating the sweet chilli sauce you wanted.
Sweet chilli sauce comes in a bottle.
Oh, have you got it?
Yes.
Well, that's okay then.
So mozzarella sticks with a small amount of rocket salad underneath with sweet chilli sauce. And then for main, it's going to be chicken in a creamy mushroom, garlic and herb sauce with... French fries and a bit more salad. And then for pudding, we are having lemon posset, which, by the way, is mwah, bloody beautiful, with some crumbled gluten-free digestives on the top. And I'm going to be very fat by the end of this weekend, by the sounds of it.
It's okay. That's what birthday weekends are for.
Plus cake.
Cake.
And that's it. That will be my birthday weekend
done. But
what
are your plans to do for your birthday weekend? Like those moments in between? You said you wanted to read?
Yeah, but I mean, Saturday, I'm not going to get much of an opportunity, am I?
No.
Like, I'm up and out by quarter to 11.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to be back till, Christ knows what time, Saturday afternoon. Then, yeah, Sunday, I just want to chill, you know?
Yeah, have a chilled one.
I want to chill, I want to watch TV, I want to watch films, maybe read book, whatever. I just want to chill the F out.
And bask in all the presents.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably going to take me all day to open 23 presents.
Yeah. I went all out. You're worth it.
I can't even remember the advert that uses the... Because you're worth it. Anyway.
L'Oreal?
Oh, I can't remember. Anywho, back to the actual episode in hand.
Yes.
Zach and I are going to talk about something that we had a very long conversation about.
earlier this week with regards to liking things and whether it's acceptable or not, and we'll go into it in more detail soon. Also, I'm going to review probably one of the best books I've ever read. And Zach, have you got anything to review?
No.
Oh. Perhaps you'd like to talk upon Charlie St. Cloud?
Oh, yeah, that'd be quite good. And also a little segue into Zac Efron and the, you know, the reality of that he's an actually extremely talented actor.
Mm.
Like, go into, like, what was it? We were joking about going, oh, it's an episode that's centred on Zac Efron. What was it going to be called?
I can't remember. You thought of the... I never think of the titles. You always just name it.
What was it? It's, Fudge. Fudge Packer. It was something really good. Anyway, it was going to be, like, a retrospective on Zac Efron. Oh, no, actually, in place of, instead of, my review... of anything. Can I talk up on Joel Schumacher after we've spoken about stuff?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm just gonna do my book review.
Do you want me
first.
To get it out just in case you need it, or do you think you've got it all up?
Actually, I might read the synopsis. So this book is called Three Perfect Liars by Heidi Perks. Somebody I'd never even heard of before, but she it was one of these kind of in Asda best-selling novels.
And yeah, they're on the charts, aren't they? And yeah. they kind of scream at you, especially when they're going for cheaper than the asking price at Waterstones in general bookstores.
I'm pretty sure you bought me this one.
I did.
So Zach bought me this one. Yeah, because I watched the TV show, what is it called?
Little Liars, something?
Pretty Little Liars.
And you like the style of Leanne Moriarty's books and something about
this.
Yeah,
there's something about it that kind of, yeah. So I really liked Pretty Little Liars, and then I absolutely loved Big Little Lies with Reese Witherspoon and Laura Dern and that girl that is in Descendants.
Shailene Woodley.
Shailene Woodley, thank you very much. Yeah, so the name of this book kind of caught my eye.
You've seen The Descendants?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Loved it.
Brilliant. What, the George Clooney one?
Yeah.
Oh, you actually seen that?
Yeah.
I've had this conversation with you.
Oh. Anyway, so yeah, the kind of, the name of the book shouted at me, and the cover I really like. I love the pink. It's something about the pink that really shouted at me. Anyway, so I'll read you the synopsis.
You usually get pink with, like, girly novels, and that, because it's centred on a crime-type thing, like...
Yeah, you wouldn't think it.
Anyway, you go ahead.
So, this is the synopsis. When a body is pulled out of an office fire, three women are first in line for questioning. All of them have reasons for wanting revenge against the company's CEO. It could be Laura, who has returned to work to find that her maternity cover isn't leaving. The CEO insists he's doing what's best for the company. Laura isn't convinced he's telling the truth.
Aren't you, Laura?
Or there's Mia. Brought in as temporary cover for Laura, she has quickly made herself indispensable. But if people knew why she was so desperate to keep her job, they might not welcome her so freely.
Whoa.
Then there's Janie, wife to the CEO, who gave up her courtroom career to support her husband and his business. She has her own secret to protect and will go to any length to keep it safe. They never thought it would come to this.
Oh my God!
Now, to be fair, reading that synopsis, it sounds a bit shoddy.
Well, it's pretty, like, benchmark usual tripe. That you find on the bookshelves, like, wannabe Leanne Moriarty's or wannabe the woman who did that, that one Gone Girl, Gillian Flynn? Gillian Flynn?
I've no idea.
I think you'd like her as well, then.
When you read kind of the reviews from, you know, different magazines, Daily Mail, so on and so forth,
good read.
You know, highly addictive, thrilling, I flew through this book. Impossible to put down, terrifically suspenseful and intriguing, a gripping thriller, totally hooked from the first page. It's one of those things where you go, come on, no. I read this in 3 days.
Mm.
Literally 3 days. I took it to the toilet with me.
You never do that.
I was reading and reading and reading, and I was reading like 50 to 100 pages per session, wasn't I? I was just absolutely flying.
And when she says 3 days, it's not like 3 whole days. It's probably about 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, you've got to bear in mind the fact that I work 9 to 5. I don't do any reading.
Basically, you read this book in 12 hours.
Less than that.
Yeah, less than that.
Much less than that.
Nine?
No, keep going.
Eight?
I'd probably say 6 or 7.
Yeah.
So yeah, bearing in mind, I get up in the morning, I go straight to work, which is working from home. I log off and then it's kind of dinner and a bit of TV. So I don't usually start reading till about 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Mm.
Finish at around 10, 10:30.
And that's not always guaranteed.
No. So in 3 days, it was literally like 6 or 7 hours. But this, it was just phenomenal. From the very first page, it was just amazing. And the thing is you go through the book. A lot of books like this, you know who done it, but then you don't really know why or how, and you kind of read the book to find out why they did it. This was like the total opposite. You had no idea who did it. And then you're, the whole time, you're like, oh, no, she did it. Oh, wait, no, she did it. Oh, wait, no, she did it. And then at the end, it wasn't any of the people that you suspected at all. So, yeah, I mean, it was just... The only nitpicky thing I'd say is the fact there were a couple of typos, and I think the typos were because she was trying to, like... I feel like she was trying to type it quickly because there was so much in there.
Yeah.
And then it kind of... It takes it a little bit. Yeah. It takes it away, doesn't it?
And you see... You said that you like... There was, like, this great epiphany... Not a great epiphany, this great, like, revelation when you found out, because you said telemarketing, and you're like, oh, no wonder, Heidi Parks was part of that.
Yeah, yeah, so...
You said you really like... You said before that you like reading about things when it's not wholly similar to your work thing, but that same work environment.
Yeah.
Like business, admin,
yeah.
Secretarial, administrative. You really like books that you can familiarise yourself with and that you have been in and been a part of.
Yeah, it's a lot of office stuff and there's a lot of office politics that's involved. And actually, I've been in those situations where, you know, well, first of all, I work in an office. Second of all, I've experienced office politics. So when you can read it, it is a bit more gripping, I guess.
And it's something you're familiar with, and it's tapping into that topic, but you're like, yeah, yeah!
Yeah, exactly.
Or you're like, no, no!
And that's what I mean. The whole time, you're kind of like, oh, I support her, but hang on a minute, she's been a bit of a bitch, so I support her, and you don't really... So you don't really have any loyalties. You kind of do, but you don't. And you just... I just flew through this book. It's a 5-star book, what's the word when you're kind of... thinking about something. No hesitation. There's no hesitation behind my review, which is absolutely 5 stars. You must read it. I can't say much more without ruining it because it is so important. But yeah, if there are... even if you're not female, it's cool. Like, it's just a really good book. This isn't... Just because it's talking about three girls doesn't mean... It's three women. Doesn't mean that you can't read it as a male. Mm-hmm. You know? It's for whomever... and give it a go, and don't be put off by the pink writing because it's not very pink inside.
Catering, I like that. It's, you know, you have to cater to a certain market and la di da. But
yeah, and absolutely, and she has. She has, and that's fine. But equally, as a man, I think you could enjoy it. You know, and I mean, when I say as a man, I mean as a man that's like, oh, no, I'm too manly for a pink cover.
I've got to read a book by Stephen Lever or Chris Ryan. Also, I recommend you don't read any book by Stephen Lever ever again.
but yeah, just because it's got pink writing doesn't mean that any specific person shouldn't read it. So I just...
No, exactly, yes.
5 stars, that's all I will say. Thank you for your time. Do you want to go on to our conversation?
Yes.
So this conversation stemmed mostly from an Iron Man t-shirt?
Not just an Iron Man t-shirt. It stemmed from me reacting to somebody online who's going to remain unnamed, who has this... He's a young man, aspiring artist himself, but he's part of this toxic fanboy culture. And I mean also, he's a type of personality that... In the face and in the wake of someone dying, they use it as a opportunity to diss someone and shit upon someone. And I really hate that. I don't like it. It's happened with far greater men than you would assume Joe Schumacher is. But it's them from someone trying to pay tribute to Joe Schumacher whilst also accusing and blaming him for ruining this, that or the other, when it shouldn't be about that. If you don't have anything nice to say at all, like, you can't, it's at detriment. It kind of invalidates your point and your motion of sharing respect, as in rest in peace. I respect you. I acknowledge you that you meant something. And then you go on to say how much you hate them and their work. It doesn't balance up with me. And I'm quite hot.
He is really hot.
I get hot under the collar about this. I don't rinse people or destroy people, but I made a point. I said, you've got to realise you've invalidated the tribute by saying you don't like this. I said, it could be me saying to you, which is going to remain unnamed, oh, he was a nice guy, but core, he made some really awful drawings. You don't do that? And then that's where it stemmed from. And also that vantage of not only that, but also that it's... Me and Laura always fall into dense conversations where we talk about the connotations societally. And it goes into the same mind frame of someone saying to you, you don't have a right to wear that T-shirt because you haven't watched the show. You don't have a right to wear that band shirt. I used to be like that, and I know how irritating it is. I know a lot of people can say or surmise, well, that's two different conversations. I'm just telling you where this conversation come from.
Yeah, I mean, from the story, you know, the situation Zach had explained to me, I said there's a couple of things here that I've experienced in life. First of all, I'm a huge fan of Harry Potter. Everything Harry Potter I absolutely love. I've got a Harry Potter makeup bag. I've got...
You've got a lot of Harry Potter merchandise. Harry Potter.
I've got a bookmark. I've got, you know, I did have a key ring that has gone somewhere.
You broke it when we had a barmy. Don't hit me.
I've got all the books. I've got all the DVDs, soon to be Blu-rays.
You remembered that, did you?
And, you know, I've got a lot of things. My purse has got Harry Potter and his address on it at Privet Drive, you know, all of those things. And somebody once said to me, he who shall not be named, for your information.
Which one, first or second?
Second.
Oh, that tosspot. Oh, mister, I'm a film buff. I know everything about films. So you go watch a film, come out and go, I like it.
Mongrel. Yeah. So he said to me, he said, oh, you're a Harry Potter fan. I said, yeah, I am. And he said, oh, you haven't got the books. I said, no, I said, I haven't actually read the books yet. Bit of a...
I bet he totally read those fucking books himself.
Apparently so, because apparently he was a big book person too, although I only saw him read about half a book in the entire 6 months. So I said, oh, I haven't actually read the books. You can't be a Harry Potter fan. Well, why not? I really like the films.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I be a Harry Potter fan?
A lot of people of this generation, their entry point to the world of Harry Potter, mine included, was the films.
Yeah, so I've watched all of the films numerous times, and I've now read the first three books. So, actually, and I love the books just as much as I love the films.
A lot of people do say it's better you watch the films, because when you read the books, it adds more layers. There's so many more layers and densities and levels to a book than the film.
Exactly.
So if you go in with that, What you have an advantage over someone else, I believe, and so many others. If you read a book, you become so beholden to it. So if you watch the film, nothing can live up to their expectation. Whereas the role reversal is completely different.
Adds to it.
Like, though you've had experiences yourself where you go, I wish it didn't undercut that or it didn't do that. You understand wholly that film and book is a different entity.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite beneficial to go at it that route. And also, this is how she became a household name, through the films. Not because of the success as a book. I didn't know what Harry Potter was until... or how big it was until, like, the fucking third film came out.
And I think this is the thing, you know, reading the book, it's like, oh, I'm gutted because that wasn't in the film. But it's like, actually... And then there are some things that are in the film that aren't in the book. And the reason why that is purely because that stage of the book is information giving. And if you don't put that in a film in a different way, it's boring as shit.
Mm-hmm.
If you translated a book directly into film, it would be so boring.
And super long.
Yeah, it would. But it would be really boring, wouldn't it? Because it's just like, oh, Christ's sakes. Because you can get so much more information so much quicker in a film than you can in a book. you can have 50 pages worth of explanation around a specific area.
Exposition and all that, yeah.
Whereas in a film, you can do that in 30 seconds, if that.
Visually, yeah, exactly. Instead of just expositionally written through the script. But they are very, 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 like, for a lot of book adaptations, they're very... Steve Kloves did a sensational job of adapting them.
And then, yeah, so the kind of moving on from the Harry Potter thing, the other thing is I have an Iron Man T-shirt, which I really, really like. First of all, quite honestly, I think it looks good on me. It suits me. It's you know, it's a light grey colour and it's really lovely.
Pencil sketch.
And second of all, I like the actual, you know, the print on the T-shirt, which, as Zach has just said, it's a pencil sketch of Iron Man.
It's a
beautiful
design. It's one of the most famous ones.
So... Somebody's once said to me, have you ever seen Iron Man? And at the time, I'd said, no. And somebody's also said to me, well, are you a fan of Marvel? Again, no.
What Marvel?
How can you... no, I know.
Yeah.
Not that thick. But again, it's like, if I like a T-shirt, why can't I wear it just because I'm not a massive fan? And it's the same as if you go into a shop. And we use Primark as an example for this.
They have a lot of brands.
But not just brands, but they also have things that say 1985 on it. I mean, kids are wearing these T-shirts nowadays. They're not born in 1985. Does that mean they don't have a right to wear it?
Well, it's usually like the foundation day of like Chicago type brand.
It's the same sort of thing. And it's like some of them are like Paris, New York City... I've never been to any of those places, but if I like the bloody T-shirt, I'll buy the bloody T-shirt, thank you very much.
It's fashion, it fits into that quota of fashion.
Exactly.
But how many people have that a Rolling Stones T-shirt or a Led Zeppelin T-shirt or what was that one that hit really big and it was the Beatles T-shirt?
Yeah, the Beatles, yeah.
And you would ask, like, I know when it comes to certain things where they're so iconographic, it kind of goes beyond your own personal engagements with it. Like, this is a thing, a point of contention for me. I knew someone who wore a Slipknot T-shirt. Like, Slipknot isn't, like, world-renowned. They've grown over the ages. And I was just like, oh, do you like Slipknot? No. Well, why are you wearing the T-shirt? And I was like that. Why are you wearing the fucking T-shirt if you have never listened to their music? Oh, I just like the look of it. And I couldn't quite compute that because Slipknot hadn't hit a level of certain, like,
I can understand that.
Because they're a niche taste, they're not world-renowned, you know what I mean? Iron Man is fucking huge, all Marvel characters, everyone, in an iconoclastic sense, you recognise it and it has its own thing, personally to you, whether or not you listen to the music, brought all the biographies, got all the vinyl, got all the LPs, but there's certain avenues of, like, different levels and, you know, plateaus and tiers of that type of criteria. But when it comes to something as huge as Iron Man and Marvel, someone giving you shit and just, like, breaking you down and making you feel... And I've been guilty of it myself before I knew what real toxic fandom is and is represented by. But still, if that person said, I saw that person wearing Slipknot, I still wouldn't know it. But to be honest, I'd have no inclination to say, do you like that band? Because who the fuck do they, don't they? Fuck it, you're just wearing the shirt. You usually would incline and go, oh, do you like them? But you never get that with, like, the Beatles, Rolling Stones, all these big, huge ones. And you never go, oh, do you like the band? Or who was the other ones? The, Welcome to the Jungle, we have fun and games. They were huge at one point.
Yeah, I know exactly who you mean.
Oh, fuck.
I'm Googling, keep talking.
Welcome to the jungle! We have fun and games!
Guns N' Roses.
Guns N' Roses. Them. But because there's such a proliferation of it and people wearing them, it's a fashion thing, it's a cultural thing. You know that T-shirt and that design more for the design and the iconography than what actually precedes it, what enables it. And it's the same with Black Sabbath now. So many people, and how the fuck Black Sabbath has reached this certain thing when it comes to pop culture that people are wearing their logo, but these young girls have probably never listened to a song in their life.
Mm.
You know, it's a certain degree of the iconoclasm and iconography that goes behind it. It takes on its own thing. But I am going to admit, I have been guilty of doing that, and I do feel bad. What does it matter? But then there's certain things where Who are you to judge someone up on the fact that they like the look of a thing? Who are you to tell them that they don't deserve to wear that T-shirt? I've also gone through a transition recently where I've brought a T-shirt to a film I haven't seen far too early before I know I've even liked it. And then I end up tearing the shit out of it. Like I did with Star Wars Rise of Skywalker. Say no more. Loads of old shit. I won't say any more. Bollocks.
Shut up now.
Fucking hate it. But I fucking hate it!
You know, it just, you know, it's brought us into this conversation where everybody is so critical. Everybody has to have an opinion on everything all the time. Everybody has to have something to say. And it's just so frustrating because it's actually got nothing to do with
it's
you.
It's evolved into a thing of Judge and jury, subjugated online, social media. It's this thing of, well, I view you as this type of individual or this type of person. You're gentrified as this person in my eyes. And to think of you, let's say, an academic type who works with archival footage of silent films and they're academic and historian. If that person came out and said that they see artistry and beauty in the films of Gore Verbinski or Michael Bay, and this is a lot of stuff that has actually been brought up by a writer that we're working with called Trevor W. Norrington, who really talks up on the levels of guilt and how we have a guilt by association or guilt just for the sake of in the eye of the beholder and the eye of the person claiming it. Why should we segregate as something as a guilty pleasure? Because that in the eyes of that person, it doesn't sit well with them that you would feel that you love something
there's
as much
such
as that.
Thing as a guilty pleasure.
No, there isn't.
A pleasure's a pleasure.
Exactly.
You shouldn't feel
Why
guilty
should you feel
for
guilty
it?
About it? And I'm so up there with Trevor when he goes on about Michael Bay and action films and Jerry Bruckheimer produced films. I'm way up there, and it really fed into something that it really added to the conversation. You have to explain yourself.
Yeah, you have to justify yourself all the time, don't you? Everything you do. Oh, you're a Harry Potter fan. How many of the books have you read? How much did you like them? Have you read them? How many times have you read them? Oh, you like Harry Potter. How many times have you seen the films? Which one's your favourite film? I mean, if you say to me, oh, you're a real Harry Potter fan, I go, yeah. And they go, well, just out of interest, what's your favourite movie? Because I'd like to tell you mine and I'd like to have a conversation with you about it.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Because then I can go to you, do you know what? My favourite one of the Harry Potters is probably whatever.
Exactly.
And then when that person says, oh, actually, I prefer this one, then you can go, okay, so what makes you think
nice
that?
Topics, nice conversations. That's what you
that's
do when
of,
you share a mutual like or love.
And that's the kind of conversations we've had, isn't it?
Mm.
Me and you have had. And that's why we got on so well when we first met, and still now, is the fact that it's like, okay, you really like that film. Why? Not why justify yourself. Why? Because I'm interested to hear what you think.
Even when it comes to horror movies, you kind of give me a little bit of shit about it, but you still will listen to it and you will still process it. At the end of the day, I'm not talking to you about it because I'm hoping to convert you. That's
and
not the
I'm
case
not
at
saying
all.
To you that I don't like horrors and I didn't like that horror movie because I'm hoping to convert
exactly.
you.
Exactly. It's just...
It's about, okay, so what is it that you didn't like about it? Oh, well, I didn't like this. Oh, okay, I can actually appreciate that. I understand where you're coming from there. But what I like about it is this element. Oh, okay, that's really interesting because I hadn't looked at it like that before. That... I don't mind, but that's not justification. That is the start of an intellectual conversation.
That is it. It's...
Justification is, what's your favourite Harry Potter film? Oh, that's disgusting.
It's not just. And this thing, it's not debate. And I think a lot of people have issue with that terminology, but it does. If it leads into to debate, the more negative connotations and social aspects are going to come out. You don't need to debate about it. You can have a strong argument, but if it's with the best of intentions... It's well served, but
there's a difference, isn't there, between debate and an intellectual conversation whereby you both argue your point.
Yeah,
and I don't mean argue in the sense of having an argument.
No,
it's about having your views and your opinions backed up with facts,
and there are
backed up with feeling, backed up with what you know, and then you pull it together and you look at something. So, for example, you look at your favourite Harry Potter film is Deathly Hallows Part 1, right?
Yes, I love that film.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. But I'd probably say my favourite is Goblet of Fire.
Mm.
But I can see, from the conversations we've had before, I can see why you love Deathly Hallows Part 1. Yeah. I can.
Oh, I can definitely see why you love Goblet of Fire.
But we've had, because we've got enough, and this is the problem, I think, it's the lack of intellect and the people out there that want to be reactionary and they want the argument. Mm. They don't want to have a conversation. They don't want to have a positive debate about it. What they want is arguments. They want to be argumentative. Yeah. They want to be confrontational.
And they want something to bitch about later, yeah, when they block you and screenshot and take everything out of context. They want it to fuel their sad little lives. And I've seen loads of people out there going, I love this film, and you're not going to change my opinion. I don't care. No, you are setting out for people to share with you there. It's done negatively.
But the thing is,
passive aggressively.
I could say to you, okay, I hate Hellboy 2. Right?
Where's my suitcase? I'm packing my stuff!
But that's the thing. I could say to you, I hate Hellboy 2, right? We'd have a conversation. That would start a conversation. You'd go, oh, Laura, why do you think that? Because that's actually my favourite film.
Yeah, why would
you? And I'd say to you, oh, well, actually, Zach, it's because
actually,
take
a film that I love and you don't like, It Chapter 2.
It Chapter 2. Okay, thank you, because I haven't seen Hellboy. But so, It Chapter 2. I'm like, actually, I really dislike that film, Zach. But that would then encourage you to go, oh, Laura, why is that? And I go, well, actually,
yeah, why is that?
I feel that it's horror for horror's sake. That's something you like. It's something I don't. I don't really feel like there was much character kind of building or.
It was really big character building the second one. First one less so, I felt.
For you, yeah. For me, no. Because
you don't like the tropes. You don't like the genericism. You don't like the genre. It's not for you.
Exactly. Cool. Well, we can have a conversation about that. But we don't have to hate each other. No. We don't have to block each other on
everything
Facebook and then post later about it.
It has to be a divide. I remember someone tried to argue with me when they were stating, this is the best Joker, that's the best Joker. Okay, you may have an opinion of who the best Joker is. I think every person who's played the Joker so far has done a good enough job, a good variation, Jared Leto included. But I had this video and I thought, this is so compelling, this is so interesting as a topic of conversation. And then this person was like basically screaming for, please, I want some opposition. And I went, fair enough, I understand that. I said, but I feel like if you segregate and quarantine it as that, you're not allowing yourself to see the depths to other people's performances. If you just put yourself in a bracket of Heath Ledger against Jack Nicholson, against this one, that one, it stops you from appreciating them on their singular levels. And I said, look.
Did Jack Nicholson actually play Joker?
Yeah, Tim Burton's on 1989.
I can imagine that was pretty good.
It was alright. I thought it was quite good. It was like the first time you saw the Joker as a certain menace.
Mm.
And though the man before him, there's been various iterations. Mark Hamill, for me, is my favourite Joker in the Batman animated TV series. Anyway, so I just went to him and I went, look, there's this really cool video and it talks upon this conversation that I'm appealing to you to listen to. It was like, I'm not listening to that. You're trying to convert me. No, you want me to try and convert you. I'm just saying this cool topic here. It's a cool topic. I just think that you're sheltering yourself away. I appreciate that you prefer Heath Ledger over Jared Leto. I absolutely appreciate that. But please listen to me. There is interesting conversation here.
Mm.
You may even expose yourself to a Joker that you've never even heard of.
I think this is the thing, it's everybody looking for drama and confrontation. And
division.
It's also the one-upmanship. Oh, you really like the colour black? I hate the colour black. Why? Well, I just hate it. How could you possibly...
It's not a colour anyway.
What? How could you possibly like it? Well, why the fuck not?
Mm. Yeah, that's
true. You know,
I'm
talking for you there. But, you know, it's the same for me. I really like the colour purple. Oh, why would you like the colour purple?
Because
I like purple. Why does it matter? I really like the colour. I can't really explain why I like it. You probably can't really explain why you don't. But that doesn't mean that I'm wrong and you're right, or you're right or I'm right and you're wrong. It just means that I like purple and you don't. I think there's this element now where we can't just settle on...
Okay, but Laura, if you like that colour, I don't see you as a person who like that colour. So please explain to me, why is it? I'm going to give you an option here. I'm going to give you an avenue. Is there a reason you like this colour? Is it perhaps a guilty colour? A colour that you keep secreted and is only allowed to be your like if it's associated with the guilt factor? You know what I mean?
Ooh.
Yeah, it's like that. Fuck off.
Do you know what? I find purple really relaxing. It makes me feel warm and comfortable inside. Is that okay? No, it's not okay with current society. Do you know why it's not okay? Because you have to be right or wrong. Everything has to be right or wrong. If that's right, that's wrong. If that's not right, it's definitely wrong. It just
drives me freaking nuts. And this is the thing, right? And I think me and you had a very similar conversation to this right at the beginning of our relationship. I have the 50 Shades of Grey series, the books and the DVDs, and I've now got the two latest, which is from Christian Grey's perspective, Grey and Darker. And I'm yet to see if Freed is actually out, because I'm not sure it is. The Mister is a different one, but same author. And a lot of people go, that's...
Freed is out.
Is it?
Yeah, it's been out for years.
No, not 50 Shades Freed.
No, Freed, his Freed. Version of Freed, yeah.
Oh, I need to get that. I really like the books. Oh, well, you like soft porn.
Mm.
Sorry?
You're lonely.
You wank to books. I'm sorry, I do what now? Like, I've actually been told things that I hadn't even imagined, quite honestly. You wank off to books. No, I really don't. I bet you touch yourself when you're reading those books. No, I read them because actually they're quite compelling. And, you know, funnily enough, it actually makes me feel good because the writing is so good. Because actually it gets you in that mind frame that you are her. And it's quite twisted and it's quite dark. And I actually really enjoy the book. I'm not gonna lie,
I read the first 50 Shades of Grey and I thought, this is actually quite compelling. This is quite compelling. And for something that came from being a so-called Twilight fan, that everyone thinks anything that isn't their art is low art. There's no low art in the sense of E.L. James. Yes, I may sometimes cater to the joke of, I'm no E.L. James, or at least I'm not E.L. James. It's just playing into that on the playful, self-referential tone. I'm going to say, there's no low art in what E.L. James does. None at all. She is a success for what she's done. The same with Stephanie Myers. Her fucking Twilight books are actually sensationally written. They are well-written stories and genre pieces. Oh, 1 minute, Zach. You like Twilight films and books? I thought that you being an experimentalist would only like the works of Louis Bunuel or these unknown cult filmmakers. I just love fucking film, man. Michael Bay is probably one of my favourite action film directors out there.
If it's a good film and it compels you...
Then and it makes you feel a certain way. Film. Why do you need to gentrify it in a way? Why does it have to be, oh, it's a good hangover movie, oh, it's a good guilty pleasure? No, I fucking love Transformers Age of Extinction. That's like one of my all-time favourite fucking films. I get more out of a Transformer film than some people would assume I would out of a David Lynch film. Don't get me wrong, I love David Lynch. I love David Lynch. But I get more satisfaction from what I view from Age of Extinction. But then people write you off. And no, you can't be a true experimentalist. You can't be a true critique. You can't be a pure cineist, cinephile. Yes, I fucking can. Fuck off. It's a tricky dicky one. It is. But it doesn't need to be a tricky dicky one. It's only that of which you put out for yourselves and what you sadly put onto other people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is the thing, you know... Just be whoever the hell you want to be. That's kind of where I wanted to go with this kind of segment, really. Is, you know, listeners and those that don't normally listen but have managed to find this on the deep dark web, you know, you've just got to be yourself.
Like, it's okay.
There's nothing more lonely than pretending to be a certain person or liking certain things in order to impress someone.
And be and part of a faction. Because you've got to remember, and D.V. Spitzer taught me something, D.V. Spitzer, the producer of the show, taught me something ages ago. He said, just because one corner of that map has been burnt off for you in the community, he says, there's always another community you can join.
Exactly. And the thing is, for me, and this is the best thing about, you know, meeting Zach, and I know it sounds a bit smushy, so my apologies, I will keep it short.
No, please don't.
But the thing is the fact that actually there are things that Zach and I have had conversations about that I don't think I would have ever told anyone before in my life. And I think you would agree with some of the things you've said to me as well. Because we have felt all our lives that we have had to keep certain things kind of secret.
When
because
it's to do with my autism and my habits and my rituals and the things I used to say or do.
Exactly, and the things you feel you have to hide in order to seem like you're a normal person. Mm. You know, there are some things that I've done that are, you know, weird and wonderful and I've told you about and we've had a laugh, but actually half the time you've gone, yeah, I've done that too. You know, there are so many things that we've been able to share with each other, and I cannot tell you guys how important that is in life. you think that you're having a happy life with you know, having that one little secret, that one little white light. It's just, there is nothing more satisfying than having a friend or a partner that you can truly be 100% honest with and know that there is absolutely no repercussions that come with that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's real love, and that's real love in the sense of relationship or kinship or friendship.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not just love in the sense of being in love with someone, being attracted to them. It's just true openness, true connection, true love, like you said, in friendship terms, in any form of relationship, whether that be, you know, sexual, if you like, or not. It's just true openness, and I think that's the thing that has made me feel so comfortable, is that I can just open up and it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and there's nothing, if you can find someone, whether it be a friend or otherwise, that you can truly be 100% open with, I think you've got life cracked.
Yeah.
Because actually it doesn't matter what life throws at us, we know we can be open with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only thing we'll ever keep secrets is like birthday presents. Christmas present, yeah. You know?
Or if I, like, broke a mug and it's, like, someone's favourite mug and I'm like, oh, I elbowed that off the side by accident when...
Yeah, but you know damn well later on you'll be like, I'm really sorry, but, yeah. Well, actually it was me and I broke it and, I, you know, I didn't mean
you
to.
Know,
but
just
that's
free
the thing.
Yourself. It is, you hit it on the head. It's the freedom to... I'm going to share. I'm not going to impose, I'm just going to share. I'm going to lay it all out for you. And then if you wish to partake in dissecting it and picking it up and looking at it and, like, it's like a bit of texture. You're looking at it and, like, how it's evolved, how it folds, how the patterns change. What
but
made
okay
you do that?
It's okay to look at that. Yeah. It is okay to analyse.
It's all right for someone else to handle it if you trust them.
Yeah, and it's okay to analyse, and it's okay to analyse together, but what it's not okay to do is to criticise.
It's also not good... If you this has happened to me before, it's happened to you, you share it with the wrong person, and then they manipulate you. They take this tapestry of yourself, and they start weaving into it and corrupting it. But if you can find that one person, like I've done with Laura, and I assume
Vice
Laura's
person,
done with
yeah,
me,
yeah, yeah.
Share. It may take a while, it may not. There's even certain strides in mine and Laura's relationship that we still haven't bettered or improved upon, but... The openness and willingness to realise the reality of that, it is so reassuring to know I can fuck up in the small sense of in an argument, and then we can still come to, I can make bad decisions or the way I handle myself, but it's good we can come back to it because it's that willingness to communicate and that openness and that freedom. I'll hear you, you hear me, though obviously I do butting quite a lot of the time, I don't mean to. I don't have many social graces, ladies and gentlemen.
He
but
really doesn't.
There's that understanding and that willingness.
But it's that deeper connection, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nothing is on the surface with us.
No.
There's no kind of surface stuff.
There's no facades.
No, there's not. And that's the thing. The only secrets we ever keep from each other truly are when I say to you, what have you got me for my birthday? And you won't tell me.
Nothing.
And that's the thing. It's, you know, there's very few things that we will keep secrets from each other. And if they are, they're for the betterment of the other person. And when that is for the betterment, it's purely because I've bought Zach a book from Asda and I don't want him to know about it yet. Because I want to surprise him, you know?
Have you?
No. Sorry.
Oh, that's...
We haven't looked to the book section in ages.
No.
But, you know, it's things like that. And if you can truly find somebody, however way that kind of... represents your life and whatever, and you can be open and honest with that person and accept each other, and it's so important. You will not find someone that accepts you until you can first accept yourself, and you cannot find somebody that accepts you until you accept that other person too.
Yeah, and that's truth of many things
but
in your life.
But once you've got that, I think you truly can face anything.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you and I, for example, we've faced some hardships. And we can get through because we've got such an open and honest relationship that we can talk to one another.
Yeah, and when we say open, we don't mean open relationship. We do not want a dirty
belief. Oh, yeah, no, sorry, just to be clear. I mean open in an emotional sense.
Emotional symbiosis sense. So don't, please,
not
if
in
there's
the sense
any peeping Tom who lives in the area who's vicariously like, yeah, I want to be a third wheel in articulate warbling, yeah. open up for me. No.
I mean, we are all up for doing podcasts with other guests.
And artists.
Special guests, artists, people that have opinions.
To showcase your opinion, to give you that openness and room
and
to
just
go.
Just have a conversation with us, you know. We're more than happy to do that, but no sexual advances, please. Thank
no.
you very much.
Or any weird alternate agenda. No politics, no agendas here. Just passion and love.
Exactly. So do you want to go on to Joel
Schumacher? Yeah, what a shock. I always have this weird sense that when I, like, I love filmmakers or, you know, as a film viewer, you can pick up on a director and you go, oh, I haven't watched him in ages. And you start binge-watching their films and they're all often on your mind. I think I have this sixth sense where with certain artists, they are always on my mind. And then eventually they die. I don't know whether it's the Ferguson curse, which is a real thing in my family, or it's just a sixth sense. But I had a sense because I was like, I really want to watch those films of Joel Schumacher's I haven't. And if those of you who are fans of the show, you have listened to my real deep delve into Batman Forever, Joel Schumacher's first Batman movie. Joel Schumacher was versatile. He delved into many things, but a lot of people in this world and in this environment can't really say they've made much of an imprint that distinguishes him from the rest. Joel Schumacher did. He was kitschy. He was camp. And he used the aesthetic and the reality and the openness of his sexuality. And he let it rule supreme. You know, the gaudy colours, the bright colours. And even in the somberness and the more melancholic work, psychological works, there was a kitsch to it. There was that Joel Schumacher edge and etch. It was something that only Joel Schumacher could do. And he was a sensational creator. And no matter what your opinions are and what he did to Batman, of which I can go through all such and sundry, I'm going to leave it with this. Watch Batman the Animated Series, and those of you who are like, oh my god, it takes so much from what Tim Burton did. No. You've got to watch Batman the Animated Series, though. It takes the theme of Burton and all that. It has more in common with what Joel Schumacher did with Batman Forever, and yes, even Batman and Robin. Taking that animated sensibility, the colour, the characters, the cast, and put it into a live-action palette and live-action reality. He did that. If you ever want to see anyone who's calling for a Batman, the animated series-styled film, please go to Batman Forever and Batman and Robin.
I'm Batman!
Exactly. A Batman Christmas special, it seems. But Joel Schumacher phone booth was my introduction to him. As a filmmaker, way before that, I had Batman and Robin and VHS, and I just watched it continuously backwards and forwards. One of those films that you just watch, and you would perform alongside it. You would be the characters, you would replay the things. Also, I was kind of entranced by Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy, getting feelings in my tingly-wingly at that age.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But when I saw her in Kill Bill, I was a little bit like, ah, she doesn't look like Poison Ivy. But Phone Booth was my introduction to Joel Schumacher as the filmmaker. And then as I started growing as a film viewer, The Lost Boys, which is a film that I'm kind of hot and cold on. Certain days I like it, certain days I'm like, I think there's something wrong with the score for me. I think it's a little bit intrusive. Coming from a guy who loves making harsh noise and loves noise, sound effects and experimental art. You know what I mean? Like, one, you have to be in a certain mood for something, Laura.
Yes,
and I think Joel Schumacher is the embodiment of that. But you cannot deny his talent, his vision, also what he lent and offered to Jim Carrey career-wise. He also challenged him, and he saw the best in him as an actor. He saw the best in all his actors. And out of all of that's come out of Hollywood, these creators and directors and casting couch producers, Joel Schumacher has always been an openly gay man. He has always been a very promiscuous, playful...
A bit like that, really.
Playful man. He's always been, like, risque, nearing on the edge of inappropriateness. But there has not been any sign that this man had any handling in something paedophilic, a paedophile ring, no form of sexual harassment or inappropriate sexual behaviour. And it just shows the testament to him as a person and personality. And it could easily have gone that way, this witch hunt. But that of which anyone who's worked with Joel Schumacher has had nothing but great things to say about him. And in the light of his death, I've seen people go out and go, Weren't he a nonce? Didn't he have a thing for little boys in his films?
Don't you think that's really frustrating, though, that just because he's gay, that he gets this kind of label that puts on that's put on him that well, he likes little boys?
That's what
Why
happened
is it that
with...
because he's gay, he has to like boys?
Ian McKellen said this when he visited our school in Van Dien. Just because I'm gay, darling, doesn't mean I want to sleep with every man I see.
Well, it's the same as being heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm heterosexual doesn't mean I look at every man in the street and go, "Whoa, yeah."
And it's the same with what's happened with Bryan Singer. I think there is some truth in there being parties and there were underage kids at parties. The same
when
with Roland Emmerich. When is there not in that culture?
But in any area
of life.
How many pubs have underage drinkers that they don't
exactly.
know about? How many clubs?
Exactly. And because of their fame and their notoriety, these people will use it to them. In the court of law and all the evidence... Bryan Singer hasn't been touched because there's nothing there. The same with Roland Emmerich. It's only due to their name and their status that it has blown up in a sense. Actors like Jessica Chastain and others, they are inappropriately reacting to a way. Jessica Chastain starred in X-Men Dark Phoenix and she made a glib comment like, "I don't want people to forget this about Bryan Singer," and put out a link about his sexual charges. There wasn't any charges. He didn't get done for it. So this is guilt by what? Judge, jury of online? Jessica Chastain, I changed my opinion on her there. I'm like, 1 minute, you're joining a series that he's a producer of? You're joining a film series that he spearheaded and created and made popular?
But he's this sexual...
Yeah. And the same thing can be said of Rose McGowan. I know that she's all out there as a strong, empowered, I'm shaving my hair off woman. She's taken advantage of her relationship with Harvey Weinstein. That if it was that awful and he was a rapist and he was that violent, why did you continue to star in numerous films for 20 years? Why would you want to be in the same room as him? And people said, oh, he shut her up with money. No, no, no. You don't get the sense. Yes, he shut her up with money in her pocket, so that's her entertaining it. If, in a sense, that's a little bit like prostitution. But no, 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 no. So judge it up on the basis of what is proven and what is fact. And it's really fucked me off that in the wake of a very talented, very kind, beloved filmmaker, due to his sexuality, you have gone out and made a horrible assumption that because he's of a certain era, and particularly because he's gay, he was a kiddie fiddler. That is not on with me. And it goes down to the same basis of you saying negative things in light of him dying. He has friends. He has family. He has his own life. People are mourning. And you want to go out and go, rest in peace, but I think your work was shit. Don't need to say anything. Because that undercuts the respectful tribute in general.
Well, we had this conversation, didn't we, in the sense of I said, you know, at my dad's funeral... You don't walk up and go, so nobody walked up to me and went, oh, I'm so sorry to hear about the loss of your dad, but he was a bit of a prick.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah. Someone,
no matter what you
someone
think,
did that.
Somebody's going to find fault with someone somewhere.
Do you know someone did that? And the one person who did it was me. Now, this is a story. My dad's side, mum's sister, and this was after granddad's funeral. It was a birthday party. And there was all a facade for my nan's Down syndrome, foster son Brian. And there's this great facade, and like Lou, who I really don't like, was going on and on and on. And I thought, in tribute to Grandad, I'm going to say something Grandad would say. So I turned around and went, Lou, you actually think this is fun? I said, Grandad would be sitting there going, oh, I just want all these fucking kids out of my fucking house. He goes, oh, this is just a fucking nightmare. This is a fucking madhouse. She turned round and looked at me as if I'd said something to the degree of that light
I
you've made.
I wish she was dead.
Yeah, or yeah. to the degree of Grandad would have fucking hated this, which I was basically saying, but not in a terrible thing. She turned on me as if I said that at the funeral. And actually, half of the funeral, I sat there whilst my dad was doing his speech and I was thinking, my granddad's scoffing at you, son.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is the thing. When my dad had a church... he had a church thingy-ma-bob funeral followed by a crematorium service.
Yeah.
And we got to the creme and we were waiting for the family car to come because I'd given it up to my sister. We didn't have enough room, so I went to the church in the cars and then in the procession, and then my sister went in to the crematorium. And it was hilarious because I got out of the car and I'm pacing. And my dad's best friend, my Uncle Michael, he goes, "You're all right, darling, you're all right." And I'm pacing. He's going, "What's the matter?" I went, "I just want a fag." I said, is it disrespectful to have a fag in a crematorium? And he went, "What would your dad have done?" I went, "Sparked up a fag." He went, "Off you go then." So I just rolled a fag, sparked up, started smoking it. And people were looking at me like, "How dare you?" I'm like, "It's my dad's funeral and that's what he would have wanted me."
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, Brandon Pete was dead set against catching anyone smoking, but he was a hypocrite in the sense that he would sit there and pretend to smoke his pipe because he used to be a pipe smoker. Yeah. So he obviously longed for that. But everyone outside the church before his funeral and the actual procession, we're all smoking, puffing away, da-da-da-da-da. And I just thought it's beautiful in the sense because he would be standing on the corners and he would be going, "Oh, you shouldn't be smoking." But if anything, he's actually saying that because he's like, "I really want a fucking puff."
Yeah.
It's so strange. But anyway, much love to anyone who is affiliated or has been touched, not in that fucking way. You horrible, horrible people take everything out of context.
Anybody who has been touched emotionally by the death of Joel Schumacher?
I'm thinking of you. He had a year long struggle with cancer. I know how cancer tears into not just people but family, but the beauty of artistry, and this is what I always say, the beauty of film is the plethora and tapestry of what they've left behind. Not just the pieces of art in general, the interviews, the culture, their personalities. I've got to say, Joel Schumacher is probably the most candid, most hilarious, most entertaining director to do an audio commentary ever, because he just... It's not a sense of he has no filter. He is so comfortable in himself as a personality and individual that he can say it. A lot of people can misconstrue things. I remember I listened to the Lost Boys commentary, and one of the main stars of that, a young boy, turned out to be sexually abused often in the industry, and he ended up dying. I can't remember his name, which is awful. But Joe Schumacher was doing the commentary, and he went, "What a beautiful young boy. He was just so beautiful." And I can understand that loads of young girls would love him, girls and boys, because he's just so beautiful. Now, listen to that in our day and age, and with the fact that he's gay, you're going to just, like, run wild with it.
Yeah, but I mean, Michael Jackson springs to mind, but just remember that beautiful is a word to describe someone's personality.
Mm.
To describe... I can look at a woman on the television and say, "Wow, she's beautiful."
Yeah.
I don't mean I but fancy
what,
her.
What
I don't mean,
I what I mean about tits. Joel Schumacher, he's like, he'd always been in the face of it. He would never kowtow to, "Oh, all the girls would fall in love with him." Instead, he went, "All the girls and the boys would fall in love with him. He is a star in the making." And it's
you
like...
You know why? It's because he's in a position where he actually knows that some people are gay and they haven't yet told anyone about it.
Yeah. And I like that openness, and also the style of his movies, his sensibilities. He himself going, "Hey, if you want to see gayness in my movies, you see gayness. All I see is me." And I'm like, yes! Yes! So, rest in peace, Joel. 80 good years. You've entertained us. You've left a real big imprint. And it's not something that will ever be taken away from you. So, yeah, that's my end of the things. I don't think I have much else to talk about.
Not today, but give it time, folks. We'll be back with you.
So, before we go, sweat-drenched press-related, we have... 4 current chapbooks available, the first of which by Kenneth M. Cale, Midnight Double Feature, a visual prose hypnotic book. Our second release, Galvin Killed a Couple of People by Ralph Myers, a really strange undulation of semi-memoir, semi-fiction confession about a murder in his family. The third book, The Tender Atrocities, by Alec Ivan Fugit. The fourth one, Wayne Mason's Automation Man, Bold Machines. All of them separately, really great experimental pieces. The tender atrocities, Alec Ivan is known, Fuga is known for his experimentations, and he does not disappoint on this. Whereas the same is said of Wayne Mason, who is also an audio-visual artist himself, and his poems, and his, the experimentalism within his poetry is something that, you know, I've never been that much of a bigger fan of poetry, because I just feel it's not done right. But in the hands of Wayne Mason or Rowan Klasnick and so many other artists out there, like Gary J. Shipley, Wayne Mason is really up there with those two other creators. And then our final fifth release in the Experimentai, or Experimentai, however you pronounce it.
Experimentai
Chaps chapbook series is The Manual by Godefroy Dronsart. And it really appealed, first of all, to Laura. She literally was like, figuratively, grabbed the manuscript and was going, I want to publish this! I was like, whoa, I haven't even looked at it yet. She's like, I want to publish it! It's a manual. A manual upon what? I don't know. You need to read it yourself. Will it give you any enlightenment to who you are? Maybe a little meta-commentary upon the machinations of the manual? What I want to do is thank all of the artists who have submitted. Thank you so much. It has been a great, passionate experience, and you've encapsulated what we've wanted to do with this press. We have learnt things through trial and error, but together you have supported us and we have supported you, and it has been a creative mutual pairing. We are creating our own community, our own side of things.
We're also going to do, just for any of those of you that are interested, we are going to do a we kind of did like a PR video at the beginning of all this to kind of explain what we're doing, how it all works. But now that we've actually done the Experimentai chapbooks, I think it's really important to show you guys what we've learned, how we've learned.
And also the realities of what goes on behind it. I've got to tell you, when it comes to the running and execution and the foundation and keeping it running, it's nothing to do with me. It is all Laura. Laura, who works a 9-to-5 job, if not longer, if not harder, she has put everything into this. Her professionalism, her manner, her acuity, her taste. She has dealt with this beautifully, and she's made something that I've loved and always wanted to do myself a reality. The truth is, a man is nothing without a strong woman, and that is the actual truth. It is the truth of the matter, though a lot of people may hide behind the veneer of, yeah, my wife just helps out, or my partner. Laura is the backbone behind Sweat Drenched Press, as is our artist. I'm just the guy who reads it, edits it, or tries to formulate it, or tries to come up with ideas. I'm really just a fellow writer, really. Laura is everything when it comes to Sweat Drenched Press. And I want people to know also, she works so bloody hard when she doesn't have to, when it's necessary. But we're going to do a video. I'll let you take over. But I just wanted to use this opportunity to thank you. Thank you for doing it and all your hard work. And, yeah, Laura's idea basically came from our experiences. What would it be, baby? This video and what we're going to do.
I mean, it will be very much about giving everybody the opportunity to listen to what's going on behind the scenes. So it would probably be a lot of me talking about what I do from an admin side of things, some of what Zach does with the editing and formatting and stuff like that. But, you know, how we can work together to make a community for those that don't feel like they fit in elsewhere. And that's the most important thing for Zach when he started this up. And that's something that has become really important for me, because it supports Zach in his writing as well. So, you know, it's going to be a lot around the most important thing for me. When I'm looking at a business, I'm looking at somewhere to host something, to home me. The most important thing I'm looking for is transparency.
Yeah.
I want to see how it works from both ends. I want to see how it works for me as a customer and you as a business.
Yeah.
So I think for me, as, you know, head of admin at SDP, it's really important that we show everybody exactly what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So I think it's really helpful for them to kind of see our workspace, what we're doing, how we do it. You know, really look into the depths and go through some of those things like the contract. Is it really a massive contract? No, it's not. Is it really difficult? No, it's not. You know, look at those
rules. Is there anything secret in there that we're trying to trip you up on?
Exactly.
Is there anything to be scared of? No, Transparency. No. Translucency. Transparency. What is the definitive one here?
Transparency is completely clear. Translucent is not quite clear.
So anyone who says translucent, you're a twat like me.
Yeah.
So we are very translucent with you.
Transparent.
I've done it again! We're very transparent. So transparent, we're like David Blaine when he was elevated in the air in London doing that weird, I'm going to survive in a cubicle box. But anyway, that is the end of this birthday episode. I'm not naming it. I'm going to leave that to you. I don't know what it's going to be called.
I'll name it then. Stop it. Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys. Look after yourselves. Stay safe. Even though the pubs are reopening, please, 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 just...
Be smart. Be
smart about it, guys, okay? Also, I'd like to thank Christopher Nosnibor for hosting our last episode. I fucking loved it. That's why I put it out. So, I'm actually longing this out because I've got really bad OCD about the mark. I want it to hit 70 minutes, so we've got 5 seconds. So, here we go. Goodbye, my lover.
Laura's birthday special. Thank you for listening to Articulate Warbling. Articulate Warbling is supported by listeners like you. If you want to help the show grow and go, check out the shop over... check out Sweat Drenched Writ on Instagram. Check out Sweat Drenched Press. Just Google that. Look for it. I think they've got sweatdrenchedpress.com. And also on Facebook, Sweat Drenched Press, and also Articulate Warbling on Facebook. There's a group for that. And you can find all back episodes of Articulate Warbling at pgttcm.com. And then just click on the shows, and you'll see Articulate Warbling there. And yeah, there we are. Zach and Laura's half is recorded over in England, and... everything else is edited and produced in the United States of America. All right. Thank you all. I hope you all enjoy Laura's birthday party special. And we look forward to seeing you for a regular episode next time. Okay, here we go.